So my dad passed along to me a book. I guess every machinist keeps a machinery handbook in the shop. And it's, I don't know, it's probably 4 inches thick. But I think the first issue came out in like 36 or something like that. It's issue one. And it was, I don't know, probably half inch thick. Well, as years progress and they add more information to the machinery handbook, they keep the original revision or add revisions to the original text. So now it's roughly about 4 inches thick. Got pages like a Bible, that thin, you know. But it's basically taking complicated formulas and tricks of the trade and things like that and putting it in terms that, you know, a skilled worker can understand. And one of the sections in the book is lubricants. You know, what lubricants are used with what metals and what lubricants work the best and what lubricants don't, and you use this with that and that kind of stuff. Well, there's a whole section devoted on that. And some of the older text that was in the original versions, you had recipes that you mix. You mix the different things for cutting, to cut certain material. And one of the recipes is milk and kerosene. And it's just, I mean, it's the strangest thing. I've never tried it. But they give a little, you know, ratio in there of mix this much milk with this much kerosene, or for this, if you're going to cut this kind of metal, you know. I would say it's probably got something to do with maybe the fat content in the milk, or I'm not sure. But there's some really strange stuff in that book if you just take the time to read it, you know. But a lot of useful information. Some of the cutting formulas for lubricants is usually some type of petroleum product with paraffin wax or beeswax, you know, that kind of thing. But it's a very interesting read. I love to read stuff like that. Sometimes I get distracted. Well, you know, instead of focusing on the job, I just sit down for a few minutes and read about this or read about that. But one of my favorites is, you know, Loctite for like thread to lock threads together with a nut and bolt. But one of the recipes is salt, water, and cast iron filings from cast iron. And I have actually used that one, and it works really well. So the salt causes a reaction with the cast iron filings, and when that's in between the threads, it basically will rest, and it will lock a set of threads down. You can't move it once you let it sit up. But it's that kind of stuff. Very interesting book.
Yeah, the salt being has like a sodium content, you will get some electrolysis there too. So not only is it the rust, but to some degree electrolysis that almost, in a sense, welds it together. You better want it to stay. yeah, it's also, I mean, the world is just full of facts like that. And I guess, you know, it's not unlike people, let's say, that enjoy trivia. And you have a very broad range of knowledge to actually participate. in trivia, or maybe it's on a certain subject, you know, maybe a certain TV show that you watch and they watch, and so these trivial things, it is a popular thing to do. To change the subject, but stay, you know, close, I wonder if you have ever, since you have the machinery there around you, made your own knife, you know, like a survival knife or anything like that.
To answer your question, yes. So I have a heat treat oven in the shop. It's a small one, and I built it with neochrome wire, which is resistor wire, but it holds up the heat really well. And it's used in the heating, to manufacture heating elements. So, and I have some, crucible brick. And basically just built my own oven with some kale wool. And I can hold 1800 degrees. So what I'll do is, if I take a meal file or a bastard file, it's just the way I do it now, you can use A2 or A1 steel. It's just cheaper, because A1 or A2 is expensive. 4140 works really well. But if you'll take an old meal file or bastard file, and when it gets worn out, I throw it in the oven and temper it and bring it down to a soft state, and then work it, you know, grind it roughly. Don't worry about the sharp edge until you get, you know, past the heat treat to get it back hard again. But it's good stock, it's good material, and I'll leave little bitty tick marks in it where the teeth were cut in the file on the hilt of the knife. And they make beautiful knives, really do. You don't have to forge anything, and I mean, for me, that's kind of the thing with a knife is, you know, take a piece of junk material and turn it into something useful. Now they're not pretty. I've never built a pretty knife, but I have built a couple to use up at camp. And I've got a small sawmill down here, so I've got some walnut, cherry wood, things like that I'll put on fire handle. But basically just take a file and temper it, get it soft, grind it into what you want, get the shape you want. Once you get it the shape you want, then you just put it back in the oven. And I don't know, bring it up to about a 50 Rockwell, and then slowly bring the temp down. And temper it, so you end up about a 40 to 48 Rockwell, and that's about perfect. But to answer your question, yes, a file works really nice, and they are pretty if you leave some of the file marks in the hilt of the blade.
I understood what you said only because I was going to go somewhere with this. I have watched a man. He actually lives in Great Britain. You may even know or have heard of Jack Lohr knives. Anyway, he's the fellow that makes Jack Lohr bushcraft knives. And he has a couple of videos from his shop. And it is for someone who likes to do things with their hands. I'm like that. I know you're like that. It is a joy to watch somebody do really good work. and takes care with everything, every detail. Terribly interesting. Well, I mentioned this because you're going to have some time on your hands, and maybe you'll go to YouTube and type in Jack Lore, J-A-C-K-L-O-R-E, and he's a ham also. So he's got and he likes to camp. He likes to do survival camping and do radio work. Uses his knives, of course. Anyway, that's would be very entertaining for you, I think. KK4JBQ.
I'll check him out, Larry. That seems pretty interesting. So, let me tell you the latest thing I stumbled on here. I don't know, about a month or so ago. With the mother-in-law over here, I bought a senior citizen can openers, but it's a can opener that cuts the seam on a can instead of piercing the top of the can and leaving that sharp edge. So I bought one of those mistakenly and took it up to the deer camp, and I had never figured out how to get the thing on a can. And I got looking at it, and I thought, what in the world kind of can opener is this, and why did I buy this stupid thing? But when I finally figured it out and cut my first can with it, I thought, well, hey, that's pretty interesting, because there's no sharp edge, and it splits the seam. So I run a trap line up on the 12-mile river, so I use sardines for bait. So I bought me some sardine cans that's got the pop-up top on it. I use that safety can opener to open the cans. Well, I got to looking, and it splits the seam perfectly. So I save my little sardine cans that's got the pop top on them, and I'll cut them with that can opener, and it makes a perfect little tray with a matching lid. So I said, well, I'm going to use that to keep my bullets and my first aid stuff in and this, that, the other. So I fill the tin full of whatever I want to fill it with, Band-Aids or bullets or whatever. And then you put that lid back on top of the canister or the can, and it's a perfect match. Put your little super glue on it, on the bottom of it, and seal it up. And I have gone into the cabinet and got a can of beans out and open it up, and there'd be some bullets in there or loose pocket change or something, just trying things out, you know. But you should check it out. I mean, if you want a quick first aid kit you keep in your vehicle, you know, with Band-Aids and whatnot, a little... fits right in your pocket, fits right in the dashboard of the vehicle, you know, and you just grab it, and if you need, you know, you need a Band-Aid or you need matches or whatever, you know, you just grab that little pull tab on it and pull the top off, and there you go. It's pretty neat. It works really nice, actually. I know it sounds corny, but, you know, check it out. I mean, it's pretty neat.
I'm on a different radio now. You'll have to give me a pickup report. I do use an HP, as other people know, and I don't talk about it, but my shop is flooded. It is in my home, so yes. We got a 3-inch-an-hour rain here a couple of years back, and it didn't harm the radio, but I just emptied everything out when I had to. It had to be sanitized. So I never installed the radio again. I have a JT-867D. You might be going to get that radio. It's a nice radio, but I never put it back in service because it took a couple of years to figure out how I could keep the patio dry and wouldn't run right into the sunroom. Oh, well, that was too long, wasn't it? So I started using HD. And I just talked to batteries. I talked to flat. I talked to them. And now I'm on a different radio. Anyway, am I sounding all right to you?
I can barely make you out. You were, there's a whole lot of hiss and sound like he's frying bacon. And I can barely make your voice out. Something about flooding and changing the radio. I didn't get it all. You're so far down in the noise. I can't hear your voice really.
I picked that up just fine, but I'm going to change back radio again. KK4JBQ. JBQ.
That's a little better. But, yeah, so you said you had some flooding a couple years ago. Is that what you said?
You have to repeat this and take up your time, but yes. It was a 3-inch-an-hour rain. I don't know how long it lasted, but that is a flood amount of rain to come down. And the patio wasn't draining real well. And the water just ran right in to the sunroom here. It's where my shack is. So I took everything out of here in a box. I've never put it back. I talk on HTs for that reason. Anyhow, so I'm disappointed that radio's not doing any better. I have another one that I'll try before we're through here. But yeah, it's one thing that people don't think of carrying with them until they need it. The other thing that's largely ignored is a fire extinguisher. For crying out loud, I keep one in the kitchen. I figure that's probably where we're going to create a fire if we're going to have a fire. But there's a fire extinguisher in the kitchen. There's first aid kits in, well, the master bath and in the car and in my go bag that I keep other radios in to just, you know, grab and go with it. You make a perfect point there, KK4JBQ.
So my dad is a retired welder. He was a pipe fitter. And when we built the house, after we got our, occupancy permit. In other words, the house is finished and it met code, so y'all go ahead and move in. My dad was pretty adamant about putting under the kitchen sink. There's a hose bib connection under there for a garden hose. And I keep a garden hose out on the porch. So if there's ever something major in the house as far as fire goes, I can take the hose bib and screw in under the sink and take a hose pipe in the house to put the fire out was the idea. But we do have one fire extinguisher, and we heat the house with wood, with a wood stove. So, and I keep first aid kit everywhere. I keep one in the truck and keep two or three of them at the shop and keep some in the house because I'm always making mistakes with a knife or skinning a knuckle or something. Anybody works with their hands, you know, you gotta have something quick and handy because mine stay cut up all the time.
Well, it's just one of the things because we don't have any armor. We're not much better off than when we were first born, when you think about it, just this thin skin covering that we have. I know some people are tougher, you know. I've got skin you can bark off real easy. I've been that way since I was a kid. Some people are tougher. My dad was, he had skin like leather. And he could do hard work all day long, and it wouldn't show. I do hard work right alongside of him, but I wore it out. KK4JBQ.
Guard machine down at the shop that puts valve guides and valve seats in a head, and it turns really slow to keep from tearing the cutters up. And last year I got my finger hung in it. The cutter moves so slow that I'll just reach up and grab the shaft to slow the machine. Stop the machine so I can pull it out of the head when I'm putting angles on valve seats. Well, this particular head I was working on had a concave surface where the valve sit, and had a radius cut into the head. Anyway, got my finger hung in between the cutter and the radius of the head. And you know, it's one thing to cut yourself with a skill saw. You can't, the blade's moving so fast, you can't see it. But when it's moving slow, you can kind of just see it coming, that kind of thing. So, I got my finger hung in it and couldn't get the thing out. I couldn't pull my finger out or anything. I mean, it was pain. I was hollering. And eventually, I mean, it took me, seemed like forever, but I had to run the machine in reverse to get my finger out. And oh my word, Larry, that was not a good day. That was not fun. But I reached up and held the switch a couple of times and just said, okay, you can do it. You can do it. Just flip the switch. And I backed out a couple of times, but it got so bad to where the pain was so bad I had to do something. So I just hit reverse and it popped it right out. But oh man, that was awful. But I had my first aid kit right there, so I got it bandaged up and I quit for the day.
I guess we're telling KK4JBQ. I guess we're telling that kind of story. So here I go. Stupidity. I'm not saying that this is anywhere near what causes accidents with most people, okay? But it was stupidity with me. And you'll know right away what happened when I tell you what I was doing. I was holding the workpiece in my hand and using a power drill to drill a hole through it. Yeah. So all of a sudden, the drill breaks through and the bit goes right through my hand. I'm right-handed, so it goes right through my left hand. Pitiful. Just pitiful. But it did happen. So I dropped the workpiece, and I turned. I made the mistake of turning my hand over to see if what damage I'd done, because it's still the bit is still in the drill, and I turned my hand around to see what damage is done, and I'm looking at the bit sticking out the other side of my hand. That's all it took, my friend. That's all it took. And this is something that doesn't speak for stamina or anything like that. When you see something sticking out of your hand like that, no, I won't say it that way. When I saw something sticking out of my hand like that, I fainted dead away. I was on the floor. KK4JBQ.
Drill bit was it? Because does make a difference, and don't ask me how I know that.
I'll tell you that it was a quarter inch, and it went right through, you know, the space between your tendons. I don't know the proper name for bones, but those things that connect the knuckles to the fingers. It went right through there, and it missed a blood vessel nicely. Put it that way. I was just fortunate to hit it where I did. So I was at the workplace, and so this was a work-related can you call it an accident when it was pure stupidity? I don't know. I guess that's an accident. So there I laid in the floor. Now, I am cold. So a fellow worker, I learned later, he picked me up. He carried me to his car. He drove me to the emergency room, and that's where I woke up. And he was a special guy to me after that. He took that kind of trouble to see that I got some attention. KK4JBQ.
Those kind of people become special real quick, especially when you're, you know, you get just sick to your stomach, and then the worst part is when it gets hung in your skin and you can't pull it out. You know, it looks like it's, well, that's, I mean, it's just stuck in there. It should come right out. But I'm telling you, skin's pretty tough when you get something hung in it and you can't get it out. You know, that's weak at the knees, sick at your stomach, face color changes. I mean, it's, I get it. But I think the worst thing I've ever done was working on a patch, what the car was, but a guy had put one of those stainless steel racing fans on the front of the engine, and I was tuning the carburetor and had a wrench laying up on the top of the radiator, and was throttling the carburetor, and the wrench fell off in the engine bay, and not thinking, I stuck my hand right in there after it to keep it from tearing the radiator up, and I mean, it was that quick. It just went ding-a-ling-a-ling just like that, and it cut me up so bad. It was awful, and it just happened so quick, just like that, and you're hurt.
Well, I'm just sorry that we had learned. That's the hard way to learn. It really is the hard way. And somehow, that's the only time I think. Well, there was the time that I had 108 degrees temperature. That burns your brain. And I fainted. I got to a clinic. I was driving the car, and I got hit with this flush of heat all of a sudden. And I knew I had to seek some help. I was in a residential neighborhood, and there just happened to be this clinic to my left. And I had just minutes before I was going to, you know, faint dead away from the heat. I got myself in there, and I got myself up to the desk, and whoever was going to listen to my story, I guess, or take my information. This also goes back to the 80s, so there were no HIPAA laws, and there were no long forms you had to fill out to get anything done. I just fainted dead away, and I woke up I don't know. I think they gave me some smelling salts, you know, to wake me up, to ask me if I was allergic to penicillin. I said no. Down went my britches, and in my butt went that needle. And I could feel it. I could feel it, that penicillin coursing through my body. And it saved my life. Honestly, I do believe. KK4JBQ.
I've told you before, we've been through the rabies vaccinations, and that's, yeah, you can definitely feel that mess going through you. And it, well, I guess it's a mess. It's saved your life, but, last year I had a real bad fall in the shop. I was moving some equipment around with the Bobcat and not paying attention, and the top of the boom on the Bobcat caught the roll-up door on the shop and pulled the roll-up door out of its track. So, and I mean, it wasn't bad. So I just grabbed a 5-gallon bucket and stood on top of the 5-gallon bucket and was trying to get the door back up the track. And I don't know exactly what happened. The bucket slipped out from under me. I fell backwards into a horizontal milling machine and hit the back of my head on the corner of the table. And it knocked me out. I came to a few minutes later. There's blood all on the floor. And couldn't hardly walk. I mean, it was just, I don't know how to explain it. It just, my mind wasn't, it was off. So, it's 98 steps from the house to the shop. So, I started walking back up to the shop, and Larry, I got so sleepy. It's hard to explain. I was walking, and it was all I could do to keep my eyes open. And I was just thinking, I am so sleepy. Why am I this tired? And I got to the house. Anna was gone. Got into the house, and I said, I've got to sit down just for a minute. And I sat down in a recliner with my hands on the back of my head and went to sleep. I slept in that chair for a couple of hours, and Anna came home, and there's blood all over the place, and took me to the hospital, and they put 9 stitches at the back of my head. It took me almost a month to get over that. I was dizzy for days and stomach upset and just exhausted. And my whole body was sore. It was just, it was really weird. But I guess, you know, that's what a concussion does, I guess. But the point is, I could not control how sleepy I was. It was just, it was all I could do. On my feet, I mean, it was awful.
Yeah, this reminds me of the conversation that you had earlier with Gary. And running equipment without proper lubrication. Well, human beings don't come with a dipstick, but you were several pints low. I'm thinking that you had lost so much blood that your heart was not able to keep a proper blood pressure and get oxygen to your brain. That's the thing that conveys oxygen to every cell in the body. And it usually works because it's a closed system, ordinarily. But you had opened it up and spilled a lot of it out. And that's the result. This lightheadedness, this urge to sleep. And you are lucky, my friend, that you didn't pass right there. Because sleepiness is, you must stay awake, you must stay conscious and still and recline. Get your feet above your head. Just, you know, think of it as being, it helps to have your feet up anyway, because your feet will survive a lot longer without oxygen than your brain will. Happy to know you, KK4JBQ.
That's pretty much what the doctor said. But I bled, now don't get me wrong. I don't think I bled that much. But he just said I just hit my head so hard. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen a milling machine table, but I mean, those things are, the whole machine weighs, I don't know, probably close to a ton, I guess. And they just don't give. And bruised my arm up real bad. I mean, I took pictures of the whole thing afterwards. It laid me open and just bruised me really bad. But anyway, not to change the subject, but today I was reading something about Winston Churchill. And I said, I read it and I just laughed and laughed. And I said, I got to tell Larry this next time I talk to him. He was during the Blitz. And Winston Churchill was on the street. And this woman approached him, British woman. And she was, I guess, frustrated because they were getting bombed, I guess. So she told him that if you've got us in this situation, then if I was married to you, I would surely poison you. I would put poison in your tea. And Winston Churchill replied with, "Ma'am, if I was married to you, I would surely drink it." I just laughed and laughed, and I said, I got to tell Larry that when I see it, when I talk to him on radio tonight.
Let me try this, changing the radios one more time, because I am on one segment on the battery, and I could just fade on out. Let me try changing the radio. KK4JBQ. KK4JBQ.
You're down in the weeds a little bit, Larry, but I can make you out. But anyway, all right. Well, listen. I'll hang with you a few more minutes, and then I'm gonna let you go. I feel like I keep you up at night. And I don't mean to do that, but I get to talking and just, I don't know, don't have a lot of conversation down in the shop by myself. So when I can have intelligent conversation with somebody, that's pretty enjoyable, you know. But at any rate, Anna's mother's holding her own right now. I have noticed, though, that she's starting to get a little more congestion in her cough. And, I mean, we're really watching it. But, man, I just cannot believe we're in this situation. But it is what it is.
Piling up pillows, or maybe she has raised her foot out. a full recline flat. Those beds come that way, you know. It's not meant for she's sleeping with her body elevated.
Well, Larry, I hate to do this, but I can't make anything out you're saying on that one. I assume you're trying to give me some advice about her resting, but she has arthritis so bad that her face is about 8 inches from her knees. She's bent that bad. And the bones have fused in that position, so she cannot lay flat on her back at all. And that's a real challenge, especially when she's resting. So it's just a major struggle because you can't pick her up because you'll break her bones if you try to move her. And I mean, we just have to move her in a blanket, two of us, to keep from, you know, really hurting her. But it's just, I cannot imagine what that woman goes through, and she's just got just the greatest attitude in the world, never complains, but it's not good.
Unfortunately, and here's a tip for anybody that uses an HT, make sure you've got a couple of batteries. I parked the first battery they gave out this evening, and I'm fully prepared tonight. I get that. But I put the first one that ran out on the charger probably a half hour ago. Now I have a little bit in that battery. The other one died on me. Bad preparation, of course. So I think I'm able to get through on this one. Am I coming all right?
That's much better. Much better. But Larry, if we need to go, that's okay. I can pick back up with you tomorrow night. But the other two radios or other two batteries, I'm not sure what it was. I just was not able to make it out at all. But this one's doing pretty good. Not sure how much battery you got. But we'll just call it quits for tonight, and I'll pick back up with you tomorrow night or the next night or whatnot. But we are still, you know, still in quarantine, and unfortunately our quarantine probably will not start the end process until her mother no longer tests positive for COVID, because we haven't had the virus yet. We've been really careful. We have had our vaccines, but we have to expose ourselves every time we go over there, and that's a hard choice to make, but we don't have a choice. We do what we gotta do. But I'm still really concerned. But we'll see what happens in the next couple of days, I guess.
JPQ, yes, of course. This has put this same pressure on families, your relationship to your children, your relationship to your parents, husband to wife, wife to husband. It's tested a lot of people's resolve, that's for certain. So, not to dwell, I was, just remember Jack Lore. I looked that up. It's very entertaining. Now, the fella is English. He speaks with a, he's from Wiltshire, so he speaks with a Wiltshire accent. I'm pretty sure you can pick it out. The longer you listen to it, this, I'll encourage you, the longer you listen to it, the more you'll understand. Our ears like that. It is your language. but he does some marvelous things with the scales on the handle. And he's just a very meticulous machinist. I think you'll appreciate his work. I'd be curious to know how you would rate his workmanship. Just put it that way. But it is getting along to, just about midnight. And I'll wish you a very good night. Good night's rest. You know how to talk on the telephone sometime or other. Don't know when's a good time to make a call to you. But there's no power problems there. There's no problems with saying what we want to say and the rest of the world not hearing. Hey, you know what I'm saying? So maybe we ought to have a phone call before too long. KK4JBQ.
So, I'm not sure you got my number, but if you got a pen, piece of paper, you can write it down. It's 864-915-9166. Just give me a call. And if I don't answer, I've laid the phone down. It's on top of a machine or something, and I didn't hear it. But I will get back with you. And I'll come back and see if you got it written down before we shut down. But KO4NUE.
Heard station in there. Come back. Intelligible. So I'm going to assume that was bleed over from another repeater, Chad. Since we're about to go, they can probably wait till we're clear. But I do have your number in the phone already. That's in there. So I'll give you a buzz. And I'll call at a certain time if you have one time better than another.
Just understand that sometimes I just can't hear it because of what I'm doing. But I will get back to you. And I think that station that came in, I heard Echolink beep behind this transmission. So I'm pretty sure that was Echolink. But at any rate, all right. Well, I'll say 7-3s for tonight. And I'll pick back up with you later on. But yeah, give me a holler tomorrow, and we'll talk on the phone. KK4JBQ. This is KO4NUE. 7-3s to you, sir. Tell Miss Donna I said hello, and you have a wonderful night. I'm clear.
For NUE, KK4JBQ. Great talking with you tonight. 7-3.